Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Desperate House Witches on Blog Talk Radio. I am Dorian, and joined by my lovely sister, as always, Miss Raina.
Hello, y'all. What's up?
Oh, have we got a treat for you all tonight.
No,
if you have ever had the pleasure of listening in to Talas and Gavanon, you know that this man is just made of awesome sauce, covered in crunchy radness.
Crunchy.
So we are going to be discussing
crunchy radness. Okay, that is a term I have not used previous to this very moment. But I think you are, because I don't think I'd want to be covered in anything crunchy right now. I'm crunchy enough. It's 9 o'clock East Coast time on Friday night. Seriously, all I want that's crunchy is a big bowl of potato chips and a big old Coke. Well, at least I got the big old Coke.
Ooh, potato chips. Yummy.
See. Do your shout-out, Mama. Do your shout-out.
All right, I got to do my shout-out early. I'm going to give a shout-out to my cousin Jessica. And you know what's coming, baby? I'm going to send you a knuckle sandwich and a bag of chips. Love you, Jess.
Love you, Jessie. So, I was wondering, can I get mustard on that knuckle sandwich?
You sure can. Do you want Grey Poupon? Do you want yellow mustard? Do you want spicy mustard? Do you want mustard with horseradish? Do you want honey mustard? You tell me what kind of mustard you want. I'll get it for you.
Damn. I didn't know you were going all gourmet on that sandwich. That is some gourmet shit right there. You're not playing, are you?
Whatever my sister wants, I will get it for her.
Oh, well, then we'll talk after the show, because I got a list.
Awesome. Cool. I'll work on your list. You work on mine.
I've been working on your list, damn it. I'm home, aren't I?
I know you are. Yay! I know my sister's home. And I got to hug on your neck last Saturday. I was so happy.
Me too. It was an awe-inspiring moment for us. But, okay.
Yeah.
So now to kick things off, I have not only a rant, but I'm going to start with a rave. So tonight, Raina has a rave and a rant.
Okay, go for it, Mama.
Okay, here's my rave. I got my haul from Valhalla Soap and Botanicals. You bitches need to get this shit. It is the deal. It is the best soap I've ever used in my whole life. The scrubs, everything. I know Donna is restocking the store right now. She is working on products like a crazy woman. I'm telling you, if you don't know what to get that special someone for Christmas, Yule, Hanukkah, whatever the fuck you got, Kwanzaa, the whole nine yards, get them some of this awesome, awesome shit. This is the only soap I use. And for me to recommend a soap, considering I am ultra-sensitive to everything, is a big deal. So that's my rant. I'm my rave, rather. Now on to my rant, okay?
Okay.
Let's guess what Raina watched this week. Don't you want to know?
Yeah. What?
Child, this is frightening. This is frightening.
Uh-oh.
How long has it been since Whitney Houston passed away? Not very long.
A long time ago?
No, not really. Whitney Houston passed away less than a year ago. A year ago, something like that. She hasn't been dead all that long. Well, our friends over our friends over at the Lifetime Network thought it would be a brilliant idea to do a reality show based on the rest of the Houstons called The Houstons on Our Own.
What?
Now, yes, I know. So,
oh, because, yeah, it worked out so well with Bobby and Whitney the first time, the first go-round.
Oh, that was such a train wreck. Well, so, okay, so I figure, you know what, Whitney Houston, icon, respected in the industry, how, you know, it'll probably be bad, but how bad could it be? Oh, let me tell you, it could be very fucking bad. First of all, someone needs to tell Bobby Christina that silver gray lipstick is not complimentary to her skin tone. I am not kidding. That's number one. Sweet girl, you know what Bobby Brown looks like. You know what Whitney Houston looks like. The girl doesn't look a damn thing like her mother. She looks like her dad, only with a big gap in her teeth.
Oh, that's unfortunate. And isn't she, like, dating her brother?
I don't know if she's dating her brother. I only watched one episode because it was scary. Now, I have to tell you, Whitney Houston, God protect her soul or whatever it is she's got going on. Here's the thing. Every time they go to commercial break, they focus in on a picture of Whitney like she was the matriarch of the family. Pardon me, but Sissy Houston, famous gospel singer, is still alive, and she is actually the matriarch of this family, although you would never know it. All attention, because of the tragedy, is focused on Bobby Christina, who is slowly passing from teenageness into womanhoodness, not very wellish, okay? And it's very dysfunctional. I mean, there's a scene where the uncles are talking about, well, where's Bobby? He ought to be there for his daughter. I mean, there are other children in the family. These other children are feeling left out, unloved. No attention is being paid to them. And they're commenting on it, and they're like, you know, my mother loves me, I'm sure, but all attention is paid on Bobby Christina. You know, sometimes I would like my mother for myself. It was actually kind of heartbreaking. So
that's so sad.
It was very sad and a train wreck. All at the same time, I couldn't believe that they actually had already put this together. So
wow.
So that was not a delight. It was not happy. So you know what? I understand everybody has the right to try to make a living, but this is fucking nuts. You know, the woman's body is barely cold, and already a reality show. Really. Really?
See, so, this is why I don't have cable. Because of that shit.
Well, not everything that's on TV is that shit. Now, mind you, there's a lot of that shit. But it's not all that shit. Fuck it. I like cable. I'm paying for Showtime. I want to see Dexter, goddammit. So, there you go.
I do not begrudge anybody who has cable because, yeah, there are plenty of excellent things to be watching out there. But it just seems like every time I turn around, there's, you know, let's put it this way. You will never run out of stuff to watch for a couple of days and do a Raina's rant on.
Oh, that's very true. That is very true.
You know,
sometimes I have to take a break. The mind goes numb. You know, things in my head start swirling around, and it's like, is this for real? I mean, it's kind of scary. If you watch too much of this shit, there's two problems. It's like high fructose corn syrup. It's highly addictive, and no matter how much you get, it doesn't seem to be like enough. is kind of scary. So that's my take on this little tidbit. Oh, you know, I just hope Bobby Christina stops doing this ridiculous fucking show about the rest of the Houstons, because it's really sad. It's very, very sad. It's a tragic situation that people are just trying to make money on, so that's not cool.
No,
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, it's, you know, another way to make money off of a tragedy.
Yeah. And that seems to be becoming the American way. I mean, it's sort of like, and it's not just us. It's not just us, because I don't know if you had, you know, I'm sure everybody has kind of heard about it at this point, but the whole with Kate Middleton, and congratulations, not that they listened to this show, but congratulations to William and Kate for, you know, procreating and, you know, many blessings upon their little bundle of joy, and I hope she's feeling better. I remember that yucky feeling. But this radio show, these two fucking jokers in Australia. Now, mind you, these are just two assholes who thought it would be funny to try to impersonate the Queen, Prince Charles, and apparently a corgi. Because, you know, the Queen has pet corgis. I'm like, yeah, like they can tell what kind of fucking dog it is, you dumbasses. I listened to part of it, what was on, I think, the nightly news or whatever. And shout out to Brian Williams. I love you. So they called in, and the nurse, the receptionist, she was also a nurse at the time, I think her name was Jacinta. I'm not fully aware of her last name. But she patched them through to the nurse that was taking care of Kate. You know, the Duchess of Windsor or the Princess, whatever she is.
She's from Cambridge, actually, I believe.
Oh, is she? Okay,
yeah,
I'm not sure.
Whatever, yeah.
So the woman who patched her through, Jacinta, you know, she patched her through to the other nurse, and the nurse was talking to her like, you know, oh, my God, I'm speaking to the Queen. Not only am I getting to take care of the princess, I'm speaking to the Queen. You know, yes, Mom. You know, it was very respectful, and I felt so horrible that, you know, these people were tricking them. Well, the woman who patched her through, she was found dead this morning. She killed herself.
Wow.
You know, so this reality shit, this pulling pranks on people, this inconsideration for what, you know, how what you do is going to affect other people's lives. You know, and I'm not saying they put a gun to this girl's head. I'm not saying they killed her in particular, but that's pretty much, that's blood on your hands. And they should be ashamed of themselves. It's just incomprehensible.
Well, okay, I disagree.
Okay.
I do. I fucking disagree. Here's why I disagree.
Well, we do from time to time.
I disagree because, A, the Queen would not have called. I'm an American, and I know that, okay? The Queen has her own set of protocols. This girl obviously was troubled, you know, respect to her family. This is a tragedy, you know, in their lives. And for her, she was obviously disturbed before this happened. Because you don't just off yourself for this reason. It doesn't make sense. So obviously, she lacked something in her that she decided to kill herself, or didn't lack it, or whatever your belief system is. If she offered herself for this reason, that's ridiculous, and you know, she actually could have been made a star from it, to be honest with you. Because they tricked, you know, how many people have tricked Sarah Palin, and, you know, she became the butt of many, many jokes. That bitch hasn't offed her fucking self yet. Not
yeah,
that I wish it on anybody, to tell you the truth. She's a mother and she has children who, I'm assuming, love her as most children do love their parents. But, I mean,
oh, yeah.
No. Was it a stupid prank? Yeah. Do they have blood on their hands? No. No. I'm sorry. No.
Yeah, you know, I will agree, and I will retract that statement. You know, it's just you never know what's going to set somebody over that edge. You know, and I'm not saying, you know, because it takes a troubled person. That's like the silliest thing to, like, take your life over. That's a temporary problem, you know, and you're choosing a permanent solution to that temporary problem.
Yeah,
you know, plus
she
had two kids and a husband, so there was obviously other things going on, but it's just like, I mean, really, really, this is all you have to do with your fucking time? You know, and they call themselves journalists. That's bullshit. You're not.
You've caused my sister to flutter, you bastard. I don't know who these radio show hosts are. I don't know if they call themselves journalists or not. It sounds like they were trying to do a shock jock thing as opposed to being journalists. You may want to double check on that. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, you never know what's going to set people over what edge or if people even have an edge. And I think people have said horrible, terrible shit to me, people I cared about. And if that didn't set me over the edge, some fucking moron, you know, at a desk, you know, pulling a prank on me sure as fuck isn't going to do it.
Yeah.
I actually, to be honest with you, about 30 years ago, witnessed a similar prank, although it wasn't as high ranking as the King and Queen. I lived in New York, and my friend, actually one of my roommates, called the radio station and pretended to be David Lee Roth because Van Halen was playing at Madison Square Garden or the Nassau Coliseum, I can't remember which, that night. And he imitated David Lee Roth so well that they had him on the phone for a half an hour. And it was hysterical. It was actually fucking hilarious. I would like to hear part of this interview and see if this was just somebody who was already disturbed and, you know, went over the edge because she got publicly humiliated.
Oh, well, it wasn't actually her talking. She was the one who patched it through. So you don't really hear her talking. I think maybe in the beginning. You know,
wait a minute. So she's not even the nurse that the call went to. She just put the call through and killed herself?
Yeah.
No. Sorry, no. The guys who made the prank call, no. I can't even go there. No, it's not like they were really fooling her. You know.
Yeah, I mean, because honestly, the accents weren't that good. But I still stand by the fact that it was in poor taste and it was stupid. And it's like, really, why do you have to do that? Why are you going to, you know, jeopardize even remotely, even if it was just a phone call, why are you even going to attempt to jeopardize a pregnant woman who's already, you know, in the hospital on IVs? Why are you going to upset somebody like that? You know, because, oh my God, she would have been friggin' humiliated had she talked to them.
Yeah,
you know,
but
that's
she wouldn't,
the princess.
But she wouldn't have talked to them. That's the point. These people are protected. These people
yeah.
have certain protocols that they have to go through to even reach each other. So that I don't even think that was that was in danger of happening. The fact of the matter is, it was a stupid joke, and this woman who was barely involved offed herself. I'm sorry, this was just an excuse. Maybe this woman had a pile of troubles, and this last little bit was just the last straw for her. I understand that people, you know, you don't know what's going on in someone's life. If I had a nickel for every time somebody offended me unintentionally, or I threatened to off myself because somebody didn't like me or somebody pulled a joke on me, are you fucking kidding me? There's just people in the world who are not well, you know, and shit happens. And I'm sorry that she's gone, and I'm sorry that she felt the need to kill herself. But I would have
yeah.
felt sorry that she felt the need to kill herself, whether it was over a prank or just depression or her husband's an asshole or her parents were abusive and she never got over it. There's a, I mean, until you know someone's complete story, you know, the idea of, well, we should all be kind to each other is great in theory. I've never seen it in complete practice.
True. That is true.
Never seen it. From, like, the most holy, noble whoever I've ever seen. No. There's no such thing. There are always judgment calls. There's always something about someone that makes you go, eh, instantly, that you don't like. I mean, we're human. Shit happens. It's sad. But, no. Just saying.
Yeah.
The princess was in no danger. The princess is in more danger of becoming totally dehydrated by the fact that she can't stop puking.
Yeah.
Ugh. I was lucky. Both pregnancies, I threw up once and was done, and that was it.
You know,
very
that's
lucky.
Funny. I did that with both my boys. Both my boys. It was, I threw up once. That was it.
Yep. Quick, easy. I don't know if it's about boys. I don't know if it's about whatever. I have no idea. But I'm grateful that I didn't go through protracted periods of morning sickness. Therefore,
yeah.
Made. So, I'd like to give a shout-out of my own to Governor Chris Christie for being on the Daily Show and giving fair enough props to my favorite president of the hour, President Barack. Yeah, so it just goes to show you that all Republicans are not insane and trying to steal all of our freedoms, as it were. Because I'm sorry, the Republicans will tell you that the Democrats want to control you, but it's the Republicans that want to know what's in my vagina. I mean, really? Really?
Yeah.
Do you need to stick your head so far up my crotch that I have to pee so you can drink? Really? Is that a necessity? Fuckers. Leave my cum alone. You're not invited in. You're not getting anywhere near it. So guess what? Stay away. I'm not interested.
Step away.
In you. Step away from the punani. I don't
there
want
you
in my
thank
bedroom.
You.
Stay away from my bedroom. Stay away from my panties. Everything I do is my choice, and I should be allowed to do it. Thank you so much. Okay, end of that. So anyway.
Yes, please, and thank you.
Yes, please, and thank you. Keep your dirty paws off my filthy drawers. Thank you.
Oh, your drawers ain't filthy. I know you clean yours.
I said silky, not filthy. They have filthy paws. I
oh,
have
filthy,
filthy drawers.
Silky.
Yes.
Oh, okay, I misheard.
Yeah, I checked my underwear for accidents because I wasn't sure. You had me second guessing myself for a minute.
did you soil yourself?
I am neither soiled nor spoiled. Well, maybe a little spoiled. But anyway, so I know our guest is going to be on soon. And, oh, we have an announcement to make when he comes on. However, I think it may be time for Raina to pull some cards. What do you think?
Go for it.
Are you going to join me?
Yeah, you know what? I am. Let's do a double reading real quick. Because okay. I'm actually waiting for Taliesin to tell me. Because I realized I didn't ask, are you calling me or am I calling you? So I may have to call him. So.
Don't show up right now.
Yeah, I know, right? Oh, and by the way, Brian sends his love. He's in the chat room.
Send mine along back to him.
Well, he can hear you, so I'm not typing that shit out. You can hear him, right? You can hear her, right?
Whatever.
Got it. That's what he said. Got it.
It's not tips. Damn it. I mean, seriously, getting dissed by the kid sister again? Shit.
What?
Getting dissed by my kid sister, really?
What? I'm not typing it out, though. He can hear you.
Okay, you can hear me. Fine, whatever.
Don't make me put some ice cubes in your panties and chill you out, girl.
You know what? I might like that. I need something to cool me down.
I know. I'll do some paraffin wax, and then I'll just make some slices and stick some ice in there. I'm sorry. I'm giving away trade secrets here, aren't I?
Hello, and to your own sister. They make all the FCC. Watch yourself.
Ain't nothing wrong with a hot wax. And that's not the kind I'm talking about.
But I'll tell you what, a Brazilian wax, oh, my God.
No, I'm Italian. No, fuck that.
we will discuss Brazilian wax on another night. But
let me know.
I'm shuffling here.
Okay. You stop now.
Thank you. Can I draw?
You.
You ready?
Yes, you may. I'm getting ready to draw myself.
Well, come on.
Well, all right. One. Oh, they're being testy tonight. Two.
Testy? One, two?
Three. There we go. Yeah, no, it's like, you know, because I do mine blind, pretty much. You know, I close my eyes and I pick out of the spread deck. So it's like, I don't know, they didn't want me grabbing them tonight.
Okay.
There we go. Ooh.
What do you got?
My first card is seize the opportunity to travel, which is funny, you know, considering the news that I got a little while ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you going to share with what else, or are we going to talk about that later?
No, you and I talked about this earlier. This is actually a business thing, so.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
My first card says a chance to make money.
Ooh. I like that, because that actually ties into my second one.
What's your second one?
Business prosperity.
Mine says everything is stable, don't rock the boat.
Cool. Okay, so that means everything is going to fall in place on its own.
Yeah. What's your third one? I'm dying of curiosity.
Okay, my third one is pleasant, unexpected discovery.
Mine says reunion with a forgotten love.
like it.
That reading is not for me.
No, this is okay. Okay. Let me see if I don't. You know what? I want to stay on this third one. This third one is separate from the other two.
Okay. Good.
This is actually a reunion of sorts. This is a male reunion of sorts, and
It was something that had fallen apart, a relationship. And through you know, becoming friends with this person again, there's a lot of things that were missed the first time around that it's like, oh, wait a minute. I didn't see that before. Where was that hiding? Why did I miss that? And it blossoms into, you know, that puppy love into deep love, you know, just fascination, like, how could I have missed this? How could I have, like, you know, not seen this diamond shining through the coal? And this is, again, this is a listener. This is somebody who's going to be listening in after the fact. I'm trying to see their face. I can't get a grasp, but I know they're wearing a blue shirt. So yeah, if you look down and you're wearing a blue shirt, that's you. That's what I'm talking about. So yeah, let's go back to the beginning real quick, because Taliesin is actually on the line, so we're gonna pull him on in a minute.
Okay.
I believe that's him.
Well, it may be, it may not be, you never know. All right, so my reading, I don't think is connected to that at all.
Yeah, no, this is separate. This is separate.
Yeah, so here's what I'm getting. What I'm getting is, this is someone who's actually already making money, who has the chance to make more money, but it may not be advised to do so right now. This is something for the back burner. And an old lover is going to show up very plainly on Facebook and say, hey, remember me? So this is a really direct reading. I'd love confirmation on that if anybody can identify themselves through this in the next couple of weeks, because this is all about to hit. So, yeah, be careful with that forgotten love. You forgot them for a reason, honey. Just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying. You tried to put this fucker out of your mind for a reason. And that fucker needs to go back to wherever the hell it is they came from. You can say hello and have coffee, but that would be it.
Yeah.
So, I'm just saying. Sometimes the past needs to stay buried.
Oh, I know. I told you, well, you know. Yeah, the ex-husband tried to Facebook friend me. Like twice, I think the beginning of the year, I was like, yeah, that shit ain't happening. I will, yeah, you stay where you are, I'll stay where I am. We're good.
Yeah, my ex-husband and I were friends on Facebook. Number two and I were friends on Facebook, and he didn't like my version of what happened in our marriage and proceeded to unfriend me, which made me go, you'll never be able to deal with the truth, motherfucker. That's fine. So,
I know,
no
right?
Loss. No harm, no foul, no loss. I don't give a shit. Go back to the hall you crawled out of, you bastard. You never paid for your fucking kid. Anyway.
I don't think he'll fit back into his mother. Oh, I didn't say that out loud. I'm sorry.
There she goes. Let's pull the co-host back in. Hey, Dorian.
Hi.
Do we have our guest ready? Is our guest on the line?
I believe he is. Hold on. Just one second. Let me pull him on.
Hello there, everyone.
I have been waiting to hear from you. Oh, my Taliesin is back. Yes.
Yes, hello. How's everybody doing out there in Desperate House Witchland?
I'm desperate, honey. I'm, She's wonderful. I'm just desperate. Oh, I have been waiting to hear your voice. And just before we wrap up tonight, we are going to make a special announcement about our friend Talison. So, Talison, how's every little thing? Tell us what's going on in the world of politics.
Well, lots of things are going on in the world of politics these days. There is all kinds of stuff going on, such as the fiscal slope that some people call a cliff, but it's much more like a gently rolling hill that's been blown out of proportion. We've got sex scandals. We've got major resignations from the Senate. And, oh, yeah, we had an election last month, too. That kind of thing happened. So,
oh, yeah.
I know. There's been at least two that I know of.
What?
Like resignations. There was one yesterday.
Yes, Jim DeMintz, everybody's favorite whack job in the Senate, has left to go head up the Heritage Foundation. And that's pretty much what Mitch McConnell and the other Republicans in the Senate are saying about it too, which is good fucking riddance, because it's because of Jim DeMint. Jim DeMint backed two major players in this last Senate cycle. It was his idea to run Todd Akin and Richard Murdoch for Senate seats.
Yeah.
And we see how well that turned out for the GOP. It was Jim DeMint's idea to run Richard Murdoch against Dick Lugar. Dick Lugar, who had been in the Senate for decades, who actually last time got reelected with 70% of the vote. Most of the Democrats voted for him, too. And they primaried him and kicked him out of the party to run Richard Murdoch in his place. And thanks to that, we now have Tammy Baldwin, the first openly lesbian senator serving in the Senate. So, Yep. As a matter of the reason that Mitch McConnell is not majority leader today is because of DeMint. So the great thing for Democrats is that he's going to work at the Heritage Foundation, where he's going to be recruiting conservative candidates. And he said that he would rather have only 30 Republicans in the Senate if they were real ones, as opposed to 60 wishy-washy ones. And I'm perfectly on board with that. I think we can reach his goal of 30 Republican senators if we all really work together on it. So
I agree. I would prefer them have 30, and we'll take the rest. And that way,
exactly,
there will be a super majority going forward. It will all be Democratic. Thank you very much. No need to even show up Republican. Thank you.
And now we're going to have Elizabeth Warren on the banking committee. She is getting that plum assignment. And a poll was just released today from Public Policy Polling, the best polling outfit in the United States, that shows that there are 51% of voters in Illinois that want to see Michelle Obama run for the Senate at the end of this presidential term. So let's see if we can get Michelle to pull a Hillary here. That would just be awesome. We could go Clinton, Obama, Clinton, Obama in the White House after that. That would be just really good. So
honestly, I know it's just a meme going around on Facebook and Reddit, and I've seen it, and it's a ticket next election of Hillary and Michelle. I am all fucking for that. Yes, please, and thank you.
Well, and the word out of the Hillary camp of all of her fundraisers, even though she is not going to make an announcement about 2016, she's told all of her fundraisers, don't take any other work. So that's
there
a good sign.
Go.
Yeah.
It's going to be a Clinton next round, kids. You just might as well get used to it now.
And have you seen the people who are already making noises about running for the Republican side? This is Christmas early for us, okay? Because the people who are talking about running on the Republican side thus far, the people who are serious about it, is Marco Rubio, which is a Cuban word for token. The frothy fellow himself, Rick Santorum, is planning to run. Paul Ryan has formed an exploratory committee for Iowa. And what's her name? Jan Brewer from Arizona. Somebody so unpopular that even that Dick Cheney looks at her and goes, "Wow, chick, you got problems." She's planning on running too. So that's
Yeah.
She's going to make Michelle Bachmann look like a political heavyweight if Jan Brewer runs. So that's the clown car part two is already starting to form.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fabulous. I am loving that lineup. And if Jan Brewer runs, make sure her flask of alcohol is full.
Yeah, and what's really fun, what's going on right now, see, I as a political wonk, you got to understand, I'm a total and complete weirdo. I mean, while most of my friends are watching, like, American Horror Story Asylum, I'm going to wait until after the season's over to watch that, because I'm too busy every night. I've got, like, four political shows that I watch every single night. I've got Rachel Maddow, I've got Lawrence O'Donnell, I've got The Cycle, which is probably one of my favorite shows anymore, and I also watch Martin Bashir, and I'm just taking a look, and of course I'm watching my C-SPAN, and I'm reading all my blogs. I'm having a lot of fun because this is a great time for a political wonk, because the Republicans are running around, they're in complete disarray, they're backbiting, they're infighting, they're acting like Democrats, for fuck's sake. So that's what's really fun about watching the GOP right now, because they're all trying to figure out, how did this year go so wrong for them? Because I'll tell you, on paper, it was looking like this was going to be a good year for the Republicans. I mean, you had an embattered incumbent who was presiding over a very sluggish economy. You had bad jobs numbers. You had a very slow recovery that most people hadn't felt yet. You had an incumbent whose favorability rankings within his own party were shaky. And you also had a Senate where only 10 Republican seats were up for re-election as opposed to 23 for the Democrats. I mean, really, at the beginning of this year, a lot of people were thinking that the Republicans had a shot of taking the White House and taking the Senate back. And yet, when all was said and done, not only had the Republicans not taken the Senate, they lost seats. The Democrats went into this election with a 52-seat majority. They now have a 55-seat majority. The Democrats gained seats in the House. The Republicans still run it, but they're 8 seats closer to losing it right now. And we had Barack Obama win with an electoral landslide. This was an electoral spanking. Mitt Romney has 4 different states he could call his home state. He lost all of them. Paul Ryan lost his hometown. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there were 9 swing states, and Obama won all of them except for North Carolina. It was an electoral shellacking, is what it was, and it was very delicious to watch because I was watching Rachel Maddow just sitting back doing the victory laps, and then of course I had to switch over to Fox News when they called Ohio for Obama to watch Karl Rove's little meltdown there. That was a lot of fun too.
Yes, it was. That was a riot and a half. I loved every minute. I'm like, give up, Carl. Give up. It's like talking to the evil witch.
It's like, for Carl, he was just thinking, holy shit, I just spent $400 million of other people's money and I lost everything. He didn't win a single race. So that's the hell of it too, is that a lot of people were predicting that this is going to be a political Armageddon because this was the first election after the Citizens United ruling. This is when unlimited dark money was going to get to flow into politics. Hell, the Republicans and the right-wingers and the right-wing bedwetters spent over $44 million trying to unseat Sherrod Brown in Ohio, and he beat them without even breaking a sweat, even though he had... they spent over $44 million. I mean, Sherrod Brown, his total campaign expenditures were about $15 million on his side. They spent $44 million trying to undo him, and he won by 9 points. So
I love Sherrod Brown. I always look at Sherrod Brown and think of Columbo because it's like, dude, buy a comb. Come on.
He sounds like Columbo, too. It's great.
It's hysterical.
I love seeing him on the Rachel Maddow show because she'll be like saying, "So what do you attribute it?" He's just like, "Well, Rachel, I think it's just old fashioned organizing, And it's like,
That's what it sounds like. It's awesome. I love
it. It is great. And you know, there are a lot of things to be happy about in this election. There were a shit ton of things to be happy about in this election. For one thing, a major question mark about American politics was really answered in a way that was actually quite positive. One of the things that a lot of intellectuals in this country and a lot of intellectuals all over the world can never understand about American politics is this idea that there are so many people in the American voting populace who are willing to vote against their own best interests, who will vote for these candidates, especially in the Republican Party, who are so obviously skewed towards the very, very wealthy. And these are people who are never going to be very wealthy, and yet they keep voting for people who seem to only care about the rich and don't care about them. And that's something that everybody's always wondered, what the hell is wrong with the American voting public? Well, we found out this time that there's nothing wrong with most of the American voting public. The only group that seems to consistently vote against its own self-interest is older white men. Older white men, that's the base for the Republican Party, because when you take a look at it, President Obama won 72% of the Asian American vote. He won 71% of the Latino vote. He won women by 15 points. He got 60% of the votes between 18 and 29. So when you take a look at it, all of these demographics voted for the president because his policies favored them over the old white guys. And so really, it's the American voting populace is not voting against its own self-interest. They're actually voting for their self-interest. It just took a while before the old white guys, who are the kind of people poisoning the well, started getting to be a small enough segment of the voting populace to really be able to see it happening.
And that's the key.
This is what speaks to my theory about how America and the American voting populace has changed. This was the insurance against, I believe, going forward, we're not going to have such right-wing demagoguery, because the voting populace is going to continue to change, going to become more mixed. We're going to have more Latino voters, more people of mixed descent, so the white man is going to become actually somewhat of the minority finally, and
right.
I don't think this kind of demagoguery is, on the Republican side, is going to be able to continue or sustain through the next election either. I think this is like the death knell of what the Republican Party has turned into since Reagan. They need a renaissance, I feel. They need to do some soul searching. They need to stop putting forth their most fundamentalist views and start moving towards the middle.
Just to give you an idea of how much the voting public has changed, I've got two statistics, and I love statistics. That's actually why I was able to call things so well before the election. I remember when I was on this show before the election, and I was giving my electoral predictions, and everybody was saying, well, I hope you're right. I was actually undercutting my electoral predictions then when I said that President Obama's going to get over 300 electoral votes. When I was doing my election map on Huffington Post, I actually nailed it 100%. I had President Obama getting 332 electoral votes, Mitt Romney getting 206, keeping the Senate and expanding our majority. I had all that down there, not because I'm so smart, but because I listen to smart people who know math. And it's like Bill Clinton said, it's arithmetic. And here's a couple of stats to show you how much things are changing. For one thing, every month in this country, 50,000 Latino youth hit voting age. Every month, 50,000. That means in 1 year, 600,000 potential Latino voters are added to the rolls every year. That's over 500,000. And to give you another idea of how much things have changed, in 1988, George Bush Sr., George H.W. Bush, or as we like to call him, Poppy Bush, Poppy Bush, Poppy Bush carried... Poppy Bush carried 60% of the vote in 1988. And in 1988, carrying 60% of the white vote. I'm sorry, she carried 60% of the white vote. And in 1988, carrying 60% of the white vote netted him over 400 electoral votes. This year, Mitt Romney captured 60% of the white vote, and it only got him 206 electoral votes. That right there shows you how much things have changed in the past 23, 24 years. And it's only going to keep changing. The share of the American electorate made up by white people is 42% this year. It's going to be 40% in 4 years. And in 8 years, it's going to go down to 37 to 36%. So it's, you know, the demographics are changing. And the thing is that watching the Republicans running around right now, you know, just, you know, like Jar Jar Binks with his head cut off. Oh, I love that image. Looking at that. They, you know, because it's really funny because there are some people in their party who get it. There are some people in that party who realize that they have so dropped the ball when it comes to demographics, and it's been really recent, too. George W. Bush in 2004 actually nailed 44% of the Latino vote. This time Mitt Romney got 21%. So the Republicans have lost over 50% of what they had in just 8 years. And there are some people in the Republican Party who are seeing the writing on the wall. People like Bobby Jindal down in Louisiana. Of course, Bobby Jindal happens to be an Asian American. He's of Indian descent. So he can see just how poorly his party plays with all of his family and friends. But some people are getting it, and they're trying to get Republicans to want to change things. But the thing is that the very same fantasy-based right-wing entertainment complex that so horribly set the Republicans up for disappointment before the election are now kicking in. The right-wing echo chamber is kicking in, and you're starting to hear certain voices that always say the same things coming in, and it's not clear right now as to who is going to win the argument. The grown-ups in the room, as I like to call them, the grown-ups are saying that Republicans are losing the demographic battle. They've got to change certain things, or else they're going to be a permanent minority party. And the things that they're talking about right now is calling off the war on women. They're talking about calling off the war on gays and calling off the war on immigrants. The problem is that there's a whole bunch of people in the Republican base who became Republicans because it's the last place that you can be a gay-bashing, woman-hating bigot and still have a home. So, and they all listen to Rush Limbaugh, and Rush Limbaugh is not backing down right now. So it's, as a matter of fact, there's an entire school of thought in the Republican Party that say the reason why Mitt Romney lost is, and get this, he wasn't conservative enough. That's the line, that he was a wishy-washy conservative, and if you had a genuine conservative in there like Jim DeMint or Marco Rubio or Rick Santorum, that they'd be able to sell conservatism to the American people. These are people who look at conservative as not as a philosophy, but almost as a religious denomination. They don't think that conservatism can ever fail. Only politicians can fail conservatism. And I'm saying, you go, guys. You go out there. You get your message out there. Please. I want Hillary to not have to raise that much money so we can, you know, get that nice 70-seat majority in the Senate. So it's, but there's a real question right now as to who's going to win out. And it's a lot of fun. I say pass the popcorn.
I have to agree. I think, you know, the whole problem I thought with Mitt Romney was the fact that, you know, he was originally known as being a more moderate Republican.
Moderate Mitt, yes, from Massachusetts, yes.
Exactly. And you know, totally couldn't pull it off when he, depending on, you know, he was a total chameleon, except for the fact that in this day and age, we see you changing.
Right, the era of YouTube, you cannot hide from what you said before because it's on video.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Daily Kos kept having these videos that they put out called Mitt Romney Debates Himself. And they would have Mitt Romney saying one thing in the primaries, and then they'd show him in one of the presidential debates where he said the exact opposite. And to tell you the truth, looking at Mitt Romney, how he reacts and how he acts throughout his various campaigns, you can't really know where the guy's politics are genuinely, But when he was running as moderate Mitt, when he was running for the governor of Massachusetts, he seemed to be a lot more comfortable in the role of moderate Mitt. He seemed to be a lot more looser and a lot more believable towards the end of this presidential campaign once he got permission from the right wing to move to the middle to try to win. Moderate Mitt seemed to fit him so well. As a matter of fact, if he had been allowed to stay moderate Mitt after leaving the governorship of Massachusetts, if he had been able to run in the primaries as moderate Mitt, he would have been a much more formidable candidate, and this really would have been a genuinely close election. Before the election, a lot of people said it's going to be close. It wasn't close. It was not even close. Barack Obama got more votes in this last election than any other president has gotten in the history of this country as far as raw vote tallies. It was not even close. But moderate Mitt, if he hadn't had the tack so far to the right in order to gain the nomination, he actually would have been a far, far better candidate. So in many ways, there are a lot of Republicans right now who are very, they really like being able to dogpile on Mitt Romney and say Mitt Romney lost us the election because he's such a terrible candidate. Well, he was a terrible candidate, but in many ways, it's conservatism failed him because it made him try to be someone that he really wasn't comfortable being, and it really, really was painfully obvious to everybody that he didn't believe any of it, and he was just trying to be a salesman, which is really what he was good at all along, is being a salesman. But, you know, that's another school of thought, is saying, well, let's just blame Romney, you know. And even Paul Ryan's hopped onto the blame Romney bandwagon. But really, I mean, Mitt Romney, he came closer to being competitive than anybody in the GOP primaries could have been. The only person that was actually had a genuine chance of being competitive was a guy named John Huntsman, who was the former ambassador to China, who actually he's a pro-choice Republican who believes in gay marriage and in the legalization of marijuana, but he likes small government and small taxes, and he could have really put up a fight, but he never survived the nominating process. The other people who could have gotten the nomination were all people like Santorum and Gingrich and Bachman and oh my. So that Romney was bad, but he did way better than any of them would have done.
True. I have to agree with that. But it was still a crashing disaster. And I think a lot of the party is now having what I now call the Karl Rove syndrome, where the facts are presented to you and you're in complete denial.
Right. Although I will say this, that Karl Rove is now starting to aggressively fight back against the Jim DeMints of the party, because Karl Rove is coming out and saying what everybody else is saying. And look, I'll tell you the same thing. There's really no reason why the Democrats should have kept the Senate in 2010 when they lost the House, that big protest election where a lot of younger people and a lot of intelligent people stayed home, and it was a bunch of cranky old white guys going out and deciding the 2010 midterm elections. That's when the Democrats lost the House. And the Democrats should not have kept the Senate. There was just way too much anti-incumbent sentiment going on at the time. But the Republicans insisted on nominating these hardcore right-wing Tea Party candidates, people like Christine O'Donnell in Delaware and Sharron Angell in Arizona and that sort of thing, people who really could snatch defeat from the jaws of victory like no one else. And the same thing happened this time. Again, originally Dick Lugar was going to be running against in Indiana, and this is a guy who was getting 70% of the vote. He would get 30% of the Democrats would vote for Dick Lugar because he is actually a genuinely good legislator, and he's an old-fashioned, I'm going to work for the good of the country and not just my party type of guy. But he was primaried from the right by the Tea Party candidate Richard Murdoch, okay, and we all see how that happened there. And then again, in Missouri, there's no reason why. There's really no reason why Claire McCaskill should have been able to get reelected in Missouri. Her state is very conservative. It's getting more Republican by the year. One of the few states outside of the Deep South, by the way, that is getting more Republican by the year. She had a very low approval rating. She was a freshman senator. She had just gotten elected. She had an extremely low approval rating. She was only rating at around 41% approval. And anytime you're below 50%, that's a danger zone for an incumbent. They really should have been able, the GOP should have been able to pick off her seat. But there was two candidates in the Republican primary. There was a bloke whose name I don't remember, but was very much an establishment sort of middle of the road, yeah, I don't like taxes type of Republican. And then there was the other guy, the guy who won the primary by the name of Todd Legitimate Rape Aiken. And that's the guy who got the nomination, and that's why we still have Claire McCaskill in the Senate. So it's there were several instances where the Senate should have flipped to the Republicans, but the Tea Party has been the gift that keeps on giving to the Democrats. So so now Karl Rove is saying that his Crossroads Super PAC is actually going to concentrate in 2 years not so much on putting money into the general election. They're going to focus on putting money into the primary to fight against the Tea Party and get some genuinely electable people in there. But the Tea Party is a cash cow. There's a lot of Tea Party lunatics that love to give money. So you are really going to see even though eventually I think Karl Rove's going to win and they're going to destroy the Tea Party, for the next couple of election cycles, you're going to see Republican candidates who are so bloody and beaten coming out of the primaries that, you know, we could run Al Gore's dog against them and win. So... it's fun, and you know, again, the thing is that a lot of people, if you were watching the media the way I was, and I know a lot of people don't watch the media the way I do, but if you're watching the media the way I was, there are a lot of people who are trying to figure out before this election happened what election in the past we can compare this one to. It's a favorite game amongst political pundits. They're always trying to figure out, okay, what election is this one most like? And hopefully they think they can look back and see how that last one turned out and see how this one will turn out by correlation. And really the closest election to the 2012 election in memory is the 2004 election, where we had George W. Bush going for his second term. We had a very similar situation. We had a president that had low approval ratings. We had a very sluggish economy. We had an opposition party that had a lot of money behind it, and they went and elected somebody who they thought was extremely electable in John Kerry, and they thought they were going to walk away with it, and they didn't. Because they didn't. And there were a lot of reasons why it didn't. But the thing is, the Democrats, after that election, which was, by the way, way closer than this one. I mean, George W. Bush won like 276 electoral votes, only six more than he needed to for the election. The thing is, the Democrats still walked away from it, and they said, what did we do wrong and what could we have done better? And the thing they did is they went and they put a brand new guy as the head of the Democratic Party, a guy named Howard Dean.
Yep.
Amongst progressives, Howard Dean is like saying Brad Pitt. Everybody just fucking loves the guy. And he had the 50-state strategy where we're going to go in and we're going to rebuild the Democratic Party in every single state. We're going to get rid of the political consultant class that have been soaking up millions of dollars and losing us elections over and over again. We're going to stop concentrating so much on just TV advertising. We're going to put money into a ground game, into getting people going door to door and talking and engaging people directly and asking for their votes. And he completely remade the Democratic Party so that when Barack Obama, a community organizer from Chicago, comes in with his expertise, it was like a match made in heaven. And now, when you think about it, I mean, you know, in 2008, walked away with the election. 2012, we walked away with the election, and it wasn't even close. And so, really, what the Democrats did after 2004 was really important because it completely reinvigorated the party. And except for one bad midterm, we haven't had a bad election since 2004. So, take a look at the Republicans. What's the first thing they do? They take the head of the RNC, Rince Priebus, a guy whose name sounds like it's drunk. I think the guy's drunk even when he says his name. I think his name is like Rick Prescott, and it just comes out as Rince Priebus. But This guy failed miserably. He failed completely. He blew every election that he's been the head of, and they just reelected him to another term running the Republican Party. It's kind of like Mitt Romney. Right on the eve of him losing the whole election, he gave out $100 million in bonuses to his top campaign staff. It's the Peter principle. People just fail upwards. But does that, again, you know, and now you've got Republicans who are saying that they weren't conservative enough. You've got Republicans who are thinking that if they just pass comprehensive immigration reform, that's somehow going to be the magic bullet that fixes their bad relations with the Latino community. Although, even though immigration reform is important, Latinos completely disagree with Republicans entirely on how they approach government. It goes way deeper than that. So even the smart people in the Republican Party are only looking at surfacey things. Well, let's not let our guys say the word rape anymore, which would be a great idea. Karen Hughes, who was a big, important advisor to George W. Bush, said after the election that if she hears any Republican man say the word rape in any other way other than it's a horribly violent crime, that she is going to personally cut their tongues out.
Wow.
Yeah. But the thing is that the problem here is, too, is that it's an issue-oriented thing. Even if you get the Republican guys to stop talking about rape, or if you get them to stop talking about, say, abortion, the thing is that they haven't gotten the idea that it's their positions that are so toxic and unpopular. The fact of the matter is that to be a moderate in the Republican Party now, to be a moderate, you want to ban all abortion except for rape, incest, and life of the mother. That's a moderate in the Republican Party. Okay, that's not a hardcore right-wing position. As a matter of fact, the hardcore right-wing position in the Republican Party is the one taken up by Paul Ryan, which is to ban all abortion with no exceptions whatsoever. And the thing is that you've got these political people who are telling Republicans to stop talking about it. The thing is, the crime isn't the fact that they're talking about it. The crime is that they take these positions in the first place. That's the real problem. I mean, when you take a look at it, why did, you know, a lot of people have asked, why would Todd Akin say something so stupid as to say that if it's a legitimate rape, the female body has a way of shutting that whole thing down? The thing is that is actually a position that he had to take because he is one of these people who doesn't believe in abortion, even if a woman's been raped or is the victim of incest. Now, you go to most American voters, and if you say, should a woman who has been raped be forced by the government to carry her rapist child and forced to give birth to it against her will, most people are going to say no. Hell no. Because most people still have a fucking soul.
Exactly.
But the thing is that it's become in vogue in the Republican Party, again, because of their echo chamber, where everybody's trying to out-conservative the other, where exceptions for rape have become much more normal in the Republican Party. Out of the Republican senators right now, there is 44 or 45 Republican senators. And out of those 45 Republican senators, over 20 of them oppose abortion, even in the cases of rape and incest. And they know, basically, they're trying to justify to people why they would oppose abortion for a woman who's been raped. And so they come up with this weird pseudoscience trying to say that if a woman has actually been raped, that her body shuts down and she doesn't get pregnant. Therefore, if a woman is pregnant and she says it was a result of a rape, it's obvious that she's lying. That's what they're trying to get across here to these people. And they're trying to put a happy face on a very barbaric policy, and it's just failing miserably because once you get outside of the Rush Limbaugh show, people don't look at that stuff the same way anymore. So there's just an all big house of cards that the Republicans are having to deal with here, and they're really starting to see their chickens come home to roost. Their overt embrace of everything lunatic and right wing has just really started to poison everything. And also, it's gotten to the point where the people who believe this stuff are starting to get leadership positions, and they're not shutting up about it anymore. So people are starting to really see what their policies really are, and a lot of people don't like it.
Yeah, I totally agree. While we still have time, however, I'm sorry, sis, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, honestly, I would rather them open their fucking mouths because I want to know what we're dealing with.
Well, yes.
As disgusting as it is what comes out of their mouths, I would rather it come out of their mouths than them going behind our backs and making policies, tricking us into, you know,
right.
Not me.
Well,
no,
what you have to understand,
us.
Though, is that right here, we are starting to see the end results of the Republican embrace of radical right-wing evangelical Christianity, even amongst candidates who are not themselves rabidly right-wing evangelical, and this is why. Because the party, basically Ronald Reagan opened up the doors of the Republican Party to the evangelicals back in the 1980 campaign. And
yep.
Ever since then, you've had a lot of right-wing evangelicals coming in to the Republican Party, where it's a pretty regular thing to find the most extreme right-wing Christian elements in the Republican Party. But the thing is that the philosophy of the right-wing evangelicals, the idea that certain things are just absolute truths and you cannot argue them and they are eternal and unending and the infallible word of God and all that stuff, that kind of thinking has infected people who are more loyal to the philosophy of conservatism. It's like I was saying before, where they say conservatism never fails, people can only fail conservatism. And if you've ever had an argument with some of these, especially these 20-something male, born-again, neo-libertarian conservative types, the way they talk is the attitude that conservatism is just right and natural, and if you could only see the light and you could only see the truth, that you would believe as they believe that conservatism is just this right, perfect thing that will usher in an era of utopia and bunnies and puppies and rainbows and all that shit. And the thing is that these people are treating conservatism as if it were a religious doctrine. Again, I mean, these days, if you ask people, wow, you know, George Bush was such a hardcore conservative, how do you explain the fact that he failed? They will come to you with a straight face and say, George Bush wasn't a real conservative. And that's their answer. George Bush wasn't a real conservative. Mitt Romney wasn't a real conservative. And they'll say Rick Santorum's a real conservative because he hasn't majorly failed yet. If he were to run for president, get the nomination, fail miserably, he wouldn't be a real conservative either. It's this very religious thinking that has tapped into these people, and they're thinking about conservatism. So as long as you have these people who are these radical right-wingers, they are going to talk because in their mind, they genuinely think that if people could just see conservatism for what it really is, that they would have their road to Damascus moment, the clouds would part, the sun would shine down, birds would land on their head, and you would just have this big epiphany, this revelation. So the hardcore conservatives are going to keep talking, and they are going to keep spewing this stuff because they really believe it. I mean, back in the late 1980s, when you had someone like George Bush Sr. running, he would talk about all this, oh, abortion's bad, gay people are bad, and all that, but he didn't really believe it. He actually, in 1980, when he ran against Ronald Reagan for the Republican nomination, he was a pro-choice Republican, and his wife and his daughter stayed pro-choice the entire time he was in office. He only took an anti-choice, anti-abortion stand because he had to join Ronald Reagan's ticket once Reagan got the nomination. But he never really believed this stuff, and he would give lip service to things in the campaign, but then when he would get elected, he would just go back to doing what he thought was really important, which is usually financial and fiscal and that kind of stuff. And it was like that for Republicans, the old-style Republicans who had to convert to the new style of thinking in the 80s and the 90s would be like that. They would give lip service on the campaign trail, but then when they actually got to Washington and they had to start governing, then they would be much more realistic, and they would shunt that stuff off to the side until the next election. But now you're seeing people who are conservative politicians who have always been conservative politicians. They came into the Republican Party in the late 70s or the 80s or the 90s as a hardcore conservative, and these people are genuine believers. So no matter how much people like Karl Rove or Karen Hughes or any of these people would like to think otherwise, these guys are going to keep opening their mouths and saying shit as long as they have the platform to do it, which is good for us. So
I'm actually going to stop you for a second. I'm going to let Sis actually make the announcement.
Okay.
And we actually have a caller on the line with a question when she is done announcing the awesome news. So take it, Sis.
Okay. Well, because our shows with you, Taliesin, are so popular, and because it's always an education, We would like to let our audience know that Taliesin is going to do a monthly spot with us. He is our pagan pundit, and we are going to ask him to join us the first Friday of every month, and he is going to enlighten us as to what is really going on in politics. So we've had a lot of compliments about the shows that you're on, Taliesin. We are honored to have you, and we are grateful that you are willing to do this with us. So, yes, folks, the first Friday of every month, the Pagan Pundit is ours, and we hope you will tune in every month, as we hope you tune in every show, and listen to the information that this man has for us, because I'll tell you what, he has allayed so many of my fears. Going into the last election, Taliesin had to calm me down because I was stressed out in the first 20 minutes after the Eastern Seaboard closed down from voting, and I was just a bundle of nerves, and he's like, we've got this, relax, and it was great.
Yeah, and also I want to let folks know that I'm also actually going to be starting my own video blog. It's not going to be until after I settle into a house. I'm currently looking to buy a house, so it's probably going to be sometime in the spring. I'm going to be starting a video blog and a podcast called The Pagan Pundit. So any questions people have that I can't get to on my appearances on the show here, you can send them in via email, and I will answer them on video or audio form on The Pagan Pundit video blog.
Excellent.
Awesome.
I'm thrilled. Yay. I am thrilled. So anyway, we do have a caller. We're very excited about this, Taliesin. So
yay,
thank you so much for agreeing to do it. I'm
okay.
Looking forward to the video blog. You are a sweet, sweetheart. I've only met you in person once, but I adored you. And we are just so grateful that you're doing this.
I'm glad to do this, yes.
And it's an education for us, and I want other pagans to understand what's going on out there and why it's so important that we stay engaged in the political process. So, sis, I know we've only got about 15 minutes left. Let's bring that caller on with a question.
Okay.
Yeah, we have Henry on the line, and he wanted to ask you a question real quick.
Okay. Go ahead, Henry.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. My question was going back with like the whole Republican nonsense of them, you know, too much religion, not enough actual politics.
Right.
Having, unfortunately, family members that are really hardcore Republican, I had to deal with this a few times. My actual question to you is the birther issue.
A
lot of people thinking Obama was, you know, a Kenyan or whatever nonsense. How much did you think that actually factor into everything? And do you think, you know, people were actually more so turned off by, like, the concept, he's from Kenya?
Well, the thing about birtherism is that birtherism is really, birtherism is a sign, believe it or not, of how far the country's come in its attitudes towards racism. Because birtherism is completely and totally and utterly 100% a racist issue. But what it is that back in the 1960s, people were very comfortable using the N-word and coming right out and saying that they didn't like black people, yada, yada, yada. Nowadays, people, you know, there are people who are unsettled by having an African-American president. Even if he's only half black, they're still unsettled by it. But they know they can't say it out loud. And some of them really are afraid to admit it to themselves, that this race is the issue. So they'll latch on to things like birtherism, which is still, it's a way of saying, he ain't like us. He's an other from out there somewhere, which is a white dog whistle of saying, yeah, he's black. And the thing about birtherism, the only people who were swayed by birtherism were the people who were unsettled and racist and didn't want to admit it. And, you know, like I said many times before, it's not that everybody who criticizes the president is a racist. I've had my critiques of Barack Obama and his negotiating style, which thankfully this election has given him a pair of cast iron balls, as you see in the current debt negotiations. But the thing is that when somebody has to grasp on, there's enough things about any politician that you can criticize them about. When you have to grasp onto lies and things that have been proven to be lies, like the birther issue, that is the red flag that it's just it's a racial thing. Or if somebody says something like, if they use the word socialist, most of the time, you know, they'll say, you know, he's a fascist socialist. It's like, wow, that's like saying Jewish Nazi, dude. You're so fucked up. But people who have to grasp onto lies are just giving this big telegraph signal that there's another reason why they don't like him, but they're just afraid to say what it is. And it's obvious that it's a racial thing. And I really think, you know, the thing about the birther issue is that one thing that this election really showed was that the whole racist angle of the Republican Party is really hurting them in some important areas. Like, for example, like Asian Americans. I mean, Asian Americans went for Barack Obama 72%. Mitt Romney only got something like 26% of the Asian American vote. Even though, I mean, a lot of the things that, you know, people would say that, you know, oh, obviously the African-American and Latino communities liked Barack Obama because of Obamacare and that kind of thing and economic issues. Asian-Americans, you know, they're not very easily bribed because they tend to be some of the best educated out of all the ethnic groups in the country. They have some of the best jobs of anybody in the country. The reason why they're turned off from the Republican Party is the obvious racism that they see directed not at them, but at everybody else. And the, you know, Asian Americans are very, very conscious of the fact that when a group is racist towards someone else, whether it be blacks or Latinos or anything like that, that it could easily be turned on them very quickly, like it was in World War II in the internment camps. So the obvious birtherism of people like the Donald and all that in many ways really helped screw over the Republican Party with yet another demographic like the Asian Americans. So I really think that didn't really – that anybody who would believe the birther stuff obviously was not going to vote for Barack Obama already. And the people who didn't want to vote for Mitt Romney either wound up going and voting for Gary Johnson and the Libertarians or some other whack job like that. And oh, let me tell you, I'll get on the Libertarians on a future show. I've got a big bone to pick with them. But the whole birther thing, I think, if anything, it really worked to President Obama's advantage because it threw even more votes his way, especially from younger people and Asian Americans. And let's not forget, too, that there were Florida went for Barack Obama. I think he won by about 3% of the overall vote, and the gay community voted for Barack Obama overwhelmingly. And a lot of people are thinking that gays in Miami are what gave him the margin of victory there. So something else to chew on.
Wow!
Thank you, Brad. I did actually have a second question, if that's
sure.
Okay.
Sure. Real quick.
Going along with the whole, like, birtherism thing, you actually brought it up with calling Barack Obama, like, you know, a socialist. I'm trying to think how to phrase this question. They'll say, like, you know, the stimulus or giving money to the poor, you know, socialism, fascism, whatever they want to call it.
Yeah.
Why do you think, you know, such people say, you know, that's fascism, but when the banks were bailed out with hundreds
right.
of millions of dollars, that's okay. But giving it to the poor is evil, socialism, fascism, whatever you want to call it.
Well, it's obvious. I mean, it's obvious. You go and talk to a lot of Republicans, you say, what do you think about welfare? And they'll say, I hate it. But when it comes to corporate welfare, they fucking love it. And what
yeah.
it comes right down to is that, see, here's another way that the Republicans are so incredibly out of touch. They thought using words like communist and socialist were going to be a big tool that they could use against President Obama. And they would say things like, well, you know, it's socialism and all that. Let me tell you something. I am a fucking socialist, and I can tell you that he's not a socialist. But the thing is that when you saw that just shows how out of touch they are, because if you were to throw around accusations like socialist, communist, and that sort of thing back in the 60s, 70s or even the 80s, those are things that would really sting. But in the 21st century, when you say things like, oh, it's socialism, it's bad, most people who are under 30 have not grown up in a world where there was anything like a Soviet Union. The only socialism that they see are like socialist democratic countries in Europe, like the Swedes and the Icelanders, and the people who, like, oh, I don't know, take care of their people, give them health care, make sure they got food and clothing. For a lot of people in a certain age range, the word socialist is not an insult, and in many ways could actually be seen as a compliment, because socialists, as we know today, especially the European-style socialism, take care of their people. So, as a matter of fact, one of Romney's top foreign policy aides gave a speech where he talked about the threat posed by the Soviet Union, and I'm thinking, wow, that's 20 years ago. And they also referred to Czechoslovakia, another country that ceased to exist 20 years ago. It's like President Obama said in the third debate, Governor Romney, the 1980s called, and they want their foreign policy back. Which was one of the best lines in the whole debate. But that's the thing, too, is that, you know, when you hear those types of words being thrown around, the people are trying to use it as buzzwords and as hot-button words to try to turn people against something in a knee-jerk, reflexive fashion, but it doesn't work because the context doesn't work. The people who are coming up with that as a strategy, their entire ideal and strategy comes from 20 years ago, and it just doesn't fly anymore. So It's just a symptom of, you know, having taking one step forward and two steps back, or as most Republicans would call it, dancing. So, you know.
Yeah, totally. Like, I know going into this election, the one of the things that blew my mind was, you know, they're going after Obamacare, you know, it's socialism, it's evil, it's whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But then I'm looking at them like, but don't you guys call yourselves hardcore Christians? And didn't Jesus say, you know, help the less fortunate, help everyone, and then you're going to turn around and say it's bad.
These are the same people who would get a tattoo talking about how evil homosexuality is, even though the same book of the Bible that condemns homosexuality also condemns fucking tattoos. Okay,
yeah,
so
later, yeah.
So it's like the site God Hates Shrimp. I mean, it just talks about all those things that are also banned in Leviticus and Deuteronomy that are kind of selective in that. If you ever want to have something to really beat up a Christian about when they use the Bible selectively, like against gays or against anybody like that, go check out a writer named John Shore, S-H-O-R-E. His name's John Shore. I can't remember the name of his blog, but if you just Google John Shore and like Bible or Christianity or something like that, this is a guy who wrote an entire book on how the church is really shooting itself in the foot by not getting with the program on equality for gays and lesbians. This guy is great, and he uses the Bible in ways to completely shut down Christian arguments against gays and socialism and all that stuff. So check out John Shore. He's got some great stuff.
I'm
actually
posting
this right now.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and if you ever want to have fun, if you know any hardcore evangelicals, have them go listen to Hank Hanegraaff, the Bible Answer Man, because Hank Hanegraaff's favorite thing is to take all the end time prophecies and expose them for being non-biblical pieces of bullshit. So he's out. If you have anybody who tries to give you any Left Behind books or anything like that, send them over to Hank Hanegraaff's site. Their brain will explode.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, thank you for calling in, Henry.
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Henry. Absolutely. Yes, I am very proud of you. Because he is very shy, so you did awesome. Awesome,
he
awesome.
He did great. He did great.
Awesome.
Well, oh, my God, we are down to 3 minutes. Whoa.
Yes, we are.
The time with you, Talison, always seems to just fly. And I have, like, a dozen more things I want to talk about. But they're going to have to wait until the next show, apparently.
Okay, well, then after that, we can talk about the fiscal slope and how that all panned out, because that's another thing I've been talking a lot about with people lately. So, give you an idea, if we go over the fiscal slope, it's not a bad thing. So.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a relief. Okay. I'd like to hear more about that. So, just so everyone knows, if anybody's tuning in late, we have announced that Taliesin, the pagan pundit, is going to be on our show on the first Friday of every month. So we are extremely grateful and excited about this.
Now, I'm glad to be here because let me tell you, I mean, I love to talk politics and, you know, I mean, my wife hears it all the time. She's kind of sick of hearing me yabber, so it's always nice to have a fresh audience, especially people who haven't heard all my jokes yet, so, you know.
Oh, you have jokes too? Are you kidding me? And you're not sharing them?
Are you kidding? Have you ever seen online a little thing, jokes talking about you may be a redneck pagan if? Have you ever seen those?
No.
Oh, I do have to.
Because I wrote the original set of those, but anyway.
I do have to ask you one question before we go.
Okay.
We have a couple listeners that want to know where they can get a copy of your Dark of the Moon.
Dark of the Moon, okay. Go to, you know, now you have the link to go to the Dark of the Moon fan page on Facebook. They can drop me a message through the fan page, and I will tell them exactly how to get one. I've had severe website issues, so I don't have a website right now, but I do have the fan page on Facebook,
okay.
And we can do all of the PayPaling and all that, and you can get yourself an autographed copy of the film, and also I can also let you know how you can get a copy of the soundtrack LP as well.
Awesome. Okay, because we actually have, I think he posted on your page, our friend Brian.
Oh, God,
so
yes.
I'll have him get up with you.
I've just gotten unearthed from a gazillion amount of email, because right now I'm looking to buy a house, and I'm actually shifting my time. Part of the week I live with my parents. Part of the week me and my family are living with my wife's parents. And so while we're trying to close, you know, get an offer accepted on a house and close on a loan. So everything's all higgledy-piggledy right now. But anybody who's contacted me, I will be getting back in contact with you very, very soon. And as a matter of fact, you know, being this holiday season and all that fun stuff, I also am going to have a special that I'll be announcing on the Darker Moon page here, a Yule special where you can get a copy of the movie and a copy of the script book for one low price.
Awesome.
Very
cool. And it's an exact replica of the script book that I myself had on set with me as I was shooting the movie. So
fabulous.
Yep.
That is awesome.
Oh, and of course
awesome.
We'll have to talk next time about my new web series that I'm starting pre-production on, called Straightening Up, about three people who move into a house together are afraid that everybody else is going to learn their terrible secret, but they all have the same secret. They're all gay, but they act straight around each other because they're so closeted. It's called Straightening Up, and that's going to be coming out in 2013.
Awesome.
Yep.
Can't wait till we get you back on so we can talk about that. See, now this way we will have plenty of time to talk to you. But the shows still seem very short. So
yes, they do. They do. Especially when I talk about taking a breath. Yeah.
Well, we are going to have to wrap it up for tonight, but we'll be back the first Friday of next month. And we will be back with Taliesin, and we are so grateful that you are going to be joining us every month.
Well, thank you for having me. I love coming on. Yeah.
We love having you. You're awesome.
And also, people can come and check me out on Facebook. You can come to Taliesin Govan in my personal page. Just it's spelled the same way it is on the Desperate House Witches site. Just, you know, if my friends list gets filled up, absolutely everything I put out is completely public. So if you subscribe to my public updates, you'll see the same thing that my family and friends all see. So you're welcome to come and follow me on Facebook. And on Twitter, I'm Taliesin_G. So that's another place you can come and see my warped perspective on things.
Yay. Cool deal.
Yep.
Yay. Well, we are going to go ahead and wrap it up, and great blessings, everybody. Thank you guys for coming in. Thank you, Henry, for calling in. Thank you guys for the great questions. And we will see you next week with Raven Grimassi and his lovely wife, Stephanie Taylor.
Yay.
And we'll talk to y'all soon.
Party on.
Love you guys.
Love you guys. Night.
Night.